You're about to listen to an episode about dating disasters, when our quest for romance goes terribly wrong. But sometimes things do go right, and people meet their person and they make it work. If you're one of those smug bunts who's in a happy long-term relationship, we want to know your secret. What is the glue that holds you together when times get tough? How do you stay connected years after the initial lust has faded? What makes you friends as well as mates? We are looking for the secret sauce that keeps your relationship healthy and alive. Send us an email or a voice note to ladies@abc.net.au.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
He arrives with a bunch of flowers and takes you out for a nice meal. The banter is flirty and you're horny. And when you leave, he holds your hand and suggests you come back to his place. But when you get there, his housemates are smashing beers in the lounge room, there's bong water in the carpet, and the vibe is generally unwelcoming. You retreat to his bedroom where the sheets are dank and sort of sour looking, and there's a smell.
Really bad incense, like shitty, cheapest incense, dust, layers of dust everywhere, crappy band posters that he'd framed of music I hated, and there was a broken bed.
Dating should be adventurous and sexy, or at the very least, not shit. We spend hours getting ready, grooming our bodies, changing the sheets, applying makeup, and picking an outfit that somehow communicates the perfect mixture of put together, smart, sassy, and bang up for getting railed. All while vision boarding tonight as the start of our epic love story. No pressure. But what are they bringing? Finding a potential long-term lover in the fathomless silt of duds and normies is labour-intensive, generally unrewarding, and surprisingly tedious. Between swearing off the apps again, screaming into the void, and trying to manifest love through tarot, witchcraft, astrology, and animal sacrifice, is there something we can learn? Can experience tune up our radar as we swipe? Or, I've got a better idea. Should we just have fun bonding and warming our hands together over the bin fire that is the world of modern dating? I'm Yumi Steins, ladies. We need to talk about bad dates with Alita Bryden.
I went on a date with this guy and he shows up with this massive bunch of flowers. And, like, it's kind of sweet, but at the same time, like, you're stuck carrying these flowers around all night.
This is Melbourne-based writer Alita Bryden.
So we get talking about what he likes to do in his spare time, and he tells me he enjoys trolling people on the internet.
No, he told you that?
He told me shamelessly, like it was this great hobby that he had. Then he says to me, "What are your thoughts on second cousins getting married?" And I thought, this is strange. This is a strange date discussion for this guy to go through. And then he starts telling me his thoughts on feminism and why it's no good. And at this stage of the date, I'm like, how do I get out of here? How do I get home? He goes to drop me off. He goes in for a kiss. I dodge it and I run up the driveway and run home.
This experience with the troll didn't slow young Alita down. She was a motivated dater.
I used to be a real Tinder addict. Like, I would be swiping all the time to the point where my thumb was getting calloused. Like, I loved it.
Alita was having a good time, even though the dodgy dates were more common than decent dates. While clearly communicating that she was looking for a relationship, she found that men would agree that they too wanted a relationship, but then would expect one-night stands. She was ghosted and grossed out by men with grody old mattresses on the floor, impoverished conversation skills, and profoundly compromised hygiene. She was giving maximum effort but receiving minimum return. Except one day Alita realised that these bad dates made for really great stories. So she started a Facebook page called Bad Dates of Melbourne where she posted her own experiences.
Within weeks, people started writing in and the page absolutely took off. In the first 2 weeks, I think it had like 1.5 million people looking at the page.
Are you kidding?
They read these stories and they say, I thought I was alone. I thought there was something wrong with me. Mm. I thought I was the only person this was happening to. Mm-hmm. But then I found out, like I read these stories and I found out they're actually happening to everyone. They're all around us. So reading the stories is really validating if you're out there dating.
One of your stories has permanently lodged itself in my brain.
Tell me.
This is from years ago, right? A girl met some guy on Russell Street in Melbourne.
Yes.
He was like, I can't park. I'm just going to do a lap and then come back and park because I know parking on that street is so shit, right?
Yeah.
And then he just drove off.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one.
Do you remember that one?
He left her just left her on the side of the street in the gutter.
On the side of the road.
Oh, it's so brutal. And that's not the only story.
Oh, for sure.
There have been stories where like someone will be on the date and then all of a sudden the person will just turn into a runner, just completely randomly. It is so rough out there. It is so rough.
Do you know I once did a bolt on a date?
No.
It wasn't so much of a bolt. I realised halfway through it that he had a girlfriend. And I was just I'm not even going to say anything. I'm just going to leave.
I think that's fair enough.
Yeah.
That's departing politely.
I enjoy the awful stories, but I do not envy the awful stories.
Oh, I know what you mean.
What is it about modern dating that makes it easier for people to behave badly?
I think that people have always behaved badly. I think it's just that we see it now, that everything's gone digital. It's just now we talk about it on social media and there's less shame when you share a bad date story now as opposed to 50 years ago.
And Alita, why do you think we find it so delicious to share when things go wrong on a date?
Oh, bad date stories have everything. Like they have heartbreak, they have hope, they have disappointment. So they really are these like amazing little tales. And on Bad Dates of Melbourne, like there are funny stories for sure. And the stories on the page are mostly entertaining. But there are also like these really serious stories too, where we go into disrespect and consent and all of these heavier issues. So, you know, bad dates, they're kind of like an introduction to knowing yourself in a way. Like dating's a way in which we grow and learn ourselves.
Yeah, and learn how to set boundaries.
Yeah, we learn how to set boundaries. I think a lot of dating, a lot of it has to do with identity. So when you're stronger in yourself, when you know who you are, when you've set boundaries, a lot of the dating stuff falls into place and becomes a lot easier. So when we're in our 20s, we're still learning what dating is like, right? Mm. We're still learning ourselves. So you put up with a lot of bad behavior. Mm-hmm. But the older you get and the more you get to know yourself, the easier dating becomes. Like dating for me in my 40s is much easier for it was for me in my 20s.
Alita's no longer dating like it's her full-time job, but when she does go on dates, she's upfront about the fact that she runs this huge social media page dedicated to sharing bad behaviour.
You can tell they're freaking out about it, so I'm pretty upfront about what I do when going on dates now, but, you know, it doesn't work for everyone.
Sure. I feast on that fear. That sounds delicious to me. Now, Alita, one of our producers, Elsa, headed out onto the streets of Sydney. She wanted to get some stories and had a very busy evening because there were so many ladies out there with so many horror stories. This is one of the first people Elsa bumped into.
I went on a date with this very corporate fuckboy who picked me up in a Lamborghini with the like wing doors. He spent the whole night trying to show off and like drive really fast on the motorways, taking me to fancy places for drinks. And we went back to his house. He had this designer fluffy little like shih tzu dog who the whole time was like on the bed with us, and I was so uncomfortable.
Did you ever during coitus make eye contact with his dog?
Yeah. Because I was like, what are you looking at? What are you doing here? Why hasn't he put you outside? And then I was going to stay the night, but what stopped me was he rolled over and kissed his dog on the lips and then rolled over to kiss me. And I just was like, I'm getting an Uber home. Like, this is not it. Like, your dog watching and then kissing your dog at the end of it. Like, it's just too much.
We had a story on Bad Dates of Melbourne once where during the act, a dog came up and licked someone on the bum. So I have heard this sort of thing before. I feel like the corporate wanker is a real type, right? Like, they wear their patterned socks and that's their personality type.
Ouch, ouch. I've never been in a car with wing doors, I don't think.
No, I actually have to say I'd be a little impressed by that. I find that a little bit cool.
What about the dog kiss? Is that a red flag or was that woman being too sensitive?
I think it's a red flag. I feel cats and dogs need to stay out of the bedroom. Like, that's a little bit too much.
Yeah, look, the licking and the kissing is one thing, but the eye contact is another as well. Okay, our next story also takes place in a car.
One guy was obsessed with Shrek. We sat in his Tesla and we were watching Shrek and he was like showing me all of the parts in the movie. He paused it and was like, see the scene? And then he shows me his tattoo. It was like Shrek and Donkey like looking out in the sun. And then he went, wait, call me for a second. So I called him and then he pressed play. And then it was the scene, the exact sound that his ringtone made.
And what did you say?
I was just like, oh my God, cool.
I don't know. Is that a red flag or is that a green flag? I'm not so sure.
It's Shrek green, but it's red on the inside. Something that I'm getting from that story about the Shrek guy was that the woman's nodding along and she's trying to be understanding and say, okay, he's really interested in this particular animated movie for children. It's not my thing, but I will nod and smile. Rather than him finding out about her and him investigating her interests and being curious, is that something that you observe in Bad Dates of Melbourne?
Oh my gosh, all of the time. I think not asking questions is one of the big ones on dates. Like, you have a lot of men, and it is primarily men, and they go on these dates and they expect you to ask all the questions. They talk about their lives the whole time and they don't ask you anything back. So when people swipe on apps, I recommend before you go on the date, scroll through the conversation and look and see, are they actually asking questions about my life beyond, like, how was your weekend? Like, are they digging for more? Do they want to know more about who you are as a person? Or are they just going through the motions with the lifeless and you every time they answer a question?
Yeah.
Like, not asking questions are such a big red flag.
When Elsa, our producer, was on the streets talking to people, she was vox-popping men as well, but just found that some of the men's stories were like, yeah, she turned up late. It was terrible.
Men do have a tough time when dating, but it's not in the same league as women. Like, men's stories, and I don't want to discount them, like, they could be quite hurtful and sad stories. Like, you know, I wasn't tall enough, or she took advantage of me for paying for the bill all the time. But women's stories, they're quite serious. And, you know, they can be about assault and disrespect. Like, they're not in the same league as women.
Since she started cataloguing this huge living library of other people's dates, Alita has gotten some perturbing insights into her own past romances.
So I was seeing this guy, and the morning after we were together, he was hanging at my house, and he's like, oh, like, do you mind calling me an Uber so I can get home? And at the time I thought, oh, like, that's a strange request. Like, this guy was employed and quite together. Like, he said his credit card wasn't working. Anyway, fast forward a couple of years, I'm on Bad Dates of Melbourne, and someone brings up in the comments that a lot of men who cheat won't book Ubers from their own phones because they don't want the receipt to show up in their Uber history or in their email.
Oh my God.
So I looked back at that experience where the guy made me order the Uber on his behalf and I thought, did he have someone he was hiding from me? And I looked back at his behavior and some of the red flags that he was throwing up and I just think, maybe he did. Maybe he did. Like, and it's interesting because I would never have thought that that would be a red flag to look out for. But on Bad Dates of Melbourne, you learn this stuff and you become a better dater because of it.
Is that your only experience where you realised the guy was probably married?
There have been a few guys where I look back and I've had suspicions. But there's been no one where I've had like concrete evidence. I just feel like there's a lot of people on dating apps who are dishonest about their marital status. And yeah, it's like I've had guys where it hasn't sit well with me in hindsight.
Yeah. I've got a theory now. I would never, ever spend any time with a man who says his wife is in labour. Because this has happened to me a few times where I've been at a gig or I've just struck up conversation with someone and I'm quite friendly. I don't mind like yarning with a stranger. And he said, my wife is in labour. And I've been, oh, congratulations, that's amazing. And I realised later that they want to fuck someone before their baby is born. Like it's it's a whole thing. It is yes. Because I was new to this, I just didn't realise that that was a whole thing that people wanted to do.
You know, we had a story on Bad Dates of Melbourne once and the guy was on a date and he cancelled for whatever reason and she ended up finding out that the reason he cancelled the date is because his wife was giving birth to a child.
Yes, yeah.
It's so rotten out there,
it's
isn't it? It's like
rotten.
Really bad.
It's rotten out there. But I do believe in going on dates because there's something about that face-to-face contact that you really need to do that kind of cuts through all the nonsense. Like you could spend hours, days, months chatting to each other online and not really understand what it's like when you're face to face.
Yeah, I feel like you can get to know someone quite quickly within 5 or 10 minutes when it's face to face. Because when you chat with them for ages, you kind of have this idea in your head as to what sort of person they are. And a lot of the time that doesn't work out in real life.
100%.
So face to face dates are very important, I would say.
One time I went on a face to face date with this guy and I could smell a really strong smell coming off him and it wasn't cologne, it wasn't BO, it was more like something very industrial. Right? And I couldn't work it out and then eventually I got what it was. It took me a while. It was hair glue.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, hair glue, that is wild. Hair glue had a smell.
But he said to me, can you just tell me if this is going anywhere, Yumi, because I've got this other Asian girl that I quite like and I'll go out with her if you're not interested.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. And he had to put that she was Asian too.
I know. Oh,
yeah. Is there a lot of racial stuff on Bad Dates of Melbourne?
Sometimes there is. We had one just the other day where a woman went on a terrible date that she was set up with by a friend. On the date, the person played poker the whole time on their phone during dinner.
Oh my God.
She found out after the reason they were set up was because they were both Asian and the person felt like this was enough for them to have a connection. It's like,
No. That is disastrous.
Terrible.
But you know, my friends who is single and will go on dates, she said sometimes my friends just set me up simply because we are both single. That is the entire of the things that we have in common.
I love that you say she's single and she will go on dates because there's a lot of people who are single and they don't go on dates because they're so fed up with what it is like out there.
Totally. This next woman got the whole boyfriend treatment.
This guy was so romantic. Took me on like a rowboat. Incredible. Picnic by a waterfall. Amazing. I was like, I'm going to be a good girl and I'm going to like wait because I want to take it slow, take it seriously. And then after 5 dates, we had sex. It was really intense. It was really beautiful. And he was like, I feel so connected to you and I don't do anything casual. And then the next day he disappeared.
Yes. Can we talk about this thing of having sex with somebody and giving them the big boyfriend experience and the full sell and you feel like it's going somewhere, but once you've had that sex, they disappear, they ghost you. Why is that so common?
This is a real male thing, isn't it, that they do. Like as soon as they have sex, like a lot of them will no longer feel interested in you. And it's disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you feel like you're really connecting with someone and then all of a sudden like things seem to shift. It can be really devastating.
Yeah, and why do they want to do that? Why don't they just be honest?
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And you have so many like people out there and men out there who will lie, like outright lie because they want to get laid.
Yeah.
And it's really hard if you're out there dating and looking for something genuine.
Yeah, totally. It's so brutal. Alita, I've got a few more stories to share from Elsa's night out in Sydney. This next person was on a date with someone who organises orgies.
So I walked into his house, really bad incense, like shitty, cheapest incense, dust, layers of dust everywhere, crappy band posters that he'd framed of music I hated.
So this was, you went in because he was organising an orgy?
I was just curious. It was shitty, disgusting, one-bedroom flat, and then broken bed. So he conducts the orgies in this flat, right? And it was like that, and there was a broken bed.
Oh, my God.
That is a low-rate orgy. I mean, I feel if you're, like, committed to an orgy, the least they can do is a bit of mood lighting and a nice bed and maybe a few snacks when you arrive. Like, not that I'm interested in having an orgy, but, you know, you've got to have standards.
What's the worst part of the story for you? For me, I think it's the dustiness.
For me, I think it's the bed. Like, yes. You can't even get your life together to have a bed that's not broken. I mean, oh, it's a bit sad.
Yeah, it is one of the sort of primary needs, isn't it? A bed that works. I love her specificity about the cheap incense. It wasn't enough that it was just incense. It's cheap.
There are some really grotty men out there. There was a post on Bad Date to Melbourne a few days ago of a man who ate Lind balls, like the little chocolate balls, and he threw the wrappers on the ground as he finished eating them. Like, how? Like, where do these people come from? Like, they're not very house proud.
Oh, Jesus. It is, oh, my whole body is in revolt right now. Okay, Alita, here's another one for you. The night started off well.
I went on a date with a guy, a boilermaker. It was cool. We were chatting for a bit. Nice date, 20 minutes in, everything was going cool. And then at the end of the date, he kind of dropped the bomb that his last girlfriend just died and it killed the whole mood of everything. And then we were just sitting very awkwardly in the restaurant and that sort of ended it. So maybe they were not ready to date yet. It's like, am I a therapist or am I a date? It was a bit strange.
It's funny because, like, it is super awkward, but this is more traumatic than, like, a hilarious Bad Date of Melbourne story. Like, it's actually, like, quite an awful thing to have happened and, you know, you got to think of where that person's coming from. But, yeah, it's definitely a mood killer.
Very compassionate response, Alita. I guess, like, people whose last partner died have every right to date, right? Mm. I guess it's more about when men use a date, especially a first date, to just dump on somebody that they don't even know with a whole bunch of trauma and pain and sort of unreciprocated power dumping.
Yeah, and you kind of find yourself talking like you're a therapist on the date and, like, you know, giving them life advice and compassion, and that's not really what we're here to do on a date. You can feel sorry for someone, feel very sorry for the man, but at the same time, like, on a first date, it's not the most appropriate topic to be bringing up.
I think it's important to put out who you are pretty early on so that you can filter, I guess, the ones who aren't on the same page as you. So
yeah, true.
What's a good exit strategy that we could learn from Bad Dates of Melbourne?
You know, for some people this is very controversial, but I don't think you have to be honest when leaving a date. So if you get a little headache and you've got to leave, I think that's perfectly fine. We get caught up in the idea that truth is so essential and important, and it is. But if you want to slip out of a date and be kind, having a little headache or a meeting you've forgotten about can be a perfectly acceptable way to get out of it. It's not always safe to leave a date by standing up and saying, I don't like you anymore, or you've made me feel uncomfortable and leaving. Like, you can tell these little lies to get out of the date itself.
Yeah, I support that as well, especially if it's early days. You don't owe them anything.
Oh, you don't owe them anything. And, you know, you never know how they're going to react to you ending a date as well. So you need to get out of there as easily as you can.
Okay, give me some advice. I'm not dating at the moment, but I am, like, chronically single. I'm also really sensitive to perfume smells, and those sort of anything sort of fake fragrances give me an almost immediate headache and I feel queasy being around it. Would it be okay for me to say, listen, I will totally go on a date with you, but you have to promise not to wear perfume or cologne?
Well, you can always put it out there and see what sort of reaction you get. But then again, like, if your life is happy now and things are good, like, who says you have to date? Like, who says you need to go on all these dates? So dating is this great, wonderful thing that we do. But, like, if you're happy being single, be single and enjoy it. Like, single life is amazing.
Single life is amazing. I want to leave people with a little bit of hope, Alita. What's good about the dating world?
Oh, look, dating is still exciting. Like when you get to know someone, it's still like fun. And you know that exciting feeling when they send you a text and you read the text and it's like, dating is fun. Like falling in love is fun and we all enjoy it. So like there's a reason we go through these bad dates. And it's ultimately because when you meet someone amazing, you look back and you think, oh, all of that drama was worthwhile. So I think bad dates are awful, but love makes it worthwhile.
Oh, that's so nice. And we get the hilarious stories in the meantime.
I know, they're very entertaining. So,
well, thank you so much for joining us and sitting around the dating bin fire with me.
Oh, Alina. Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I've loved it.
It's great to talk to you and I look forward to seeing you on the apps.
Ah, thanks so much, Yumi. You too.
This podcast was produced on the lands of the Gadigal, Muwinina and Dharawal people. Ladies We Need to Talk is mixed by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. It's produced by Elsa Silberstein and Sarah Mashman. Our supervising producer is Emma Morris and our executive producer is Tamar Cranswick. This series was created by Claudine Ryan.